My next guest spent 14 years of his life in captivity at Guantanamo. His 2015 Guantanamo Diary memoir yielded a new wave of global outrage over the facility and what the detainees were subjected to. Finally now, free, he joins me on the line for more. Mohamedou Olslahi, you're very welcome to Global Village. Salam alaikum.
Thank you for having me. I would like to say hi to your audience. And I understand that it's a global village that your audience is everywhere over the world. And especially, I would like to send my regards and my respect to the Irish people. And today, I'm the biggest believer in what we're taught as Irish luck. I have never had any trouble calling anyone in the whole world, but today, two things happened. First, internet in my provider was so slow, I had to call the company in preparation for this interview. And second, you tried to call me and you couldn't.
I know.
This never happened to me before.
Yeah, neither to us as well. So we're so happy that we finally got to speak to you. So it's great to finally chat. So tell our listeners, because, you know, I don't think people believe this. The fact that you were actually detained for 14 years, because you only released quite recently, isn't that right?
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely, yeah. Exactly, on October 16th, and I arrived here on October 17th last year. I was arrested and kidnapped from my native country, Mauritania, because of suspicion the U.S. government had about my link to what they call Millennium Plot. And I don't know, Dil, whether you've heard of that. And they said that the circumstances and the places and people I've been with pointed out that I am part of that horrific attempt to kill innocent people. The United States of America, they tried to arrest me in Germany, but German people wouldn't cooperate. So I was lured to my native country in Mauritania. My family called me upon the suggestion of my government. They told them to tell me that my mother was dying and that I had to come back. And I was kidnapped in Dakar, held for some time, interrogated by Senegalese in presence of American intelligence, and was put in a plane by the American, and from there started my very weird, long story of complete contempt to the rule of law and disrespect to human rights and human dignity in this part of world, of the world where I am from.
It's really quite shocking that this happened to you. And like, I have to ask you, 14 years is a huge chunk of time. I've spoken to you before, Mohamedou, and I still can't, I suppose my brain can't embrace the fact that you're actually able to speak and you've actually even written a book. So how do you get on with your life after such a horrendous and traumatic experience?
Yeah, it's all my adult life before that was the 12 years I spent in Germany. I was kidnapped before 9/11, precisely on January 21st of 2000. So I spent almost 17 years completely delivered to the chaos of this so-called war against terrorism. So I spent more time in my adult life anywhere in the world, in Guantanamo Bay, more than anywhere in the world, I mean. And I really don't know a deal. And Amy, does Amy listen to this conversation?
Yes, she is. She's listening. She's horrified as much as I am.
I just try to think, you know, about try to turn this whole situation into a science rather than trying to judge people. Or why is this happening? You know, this always, why is this happening to me? Why not someone else, for instance? You know, and of course, I'm not going to hide that at certain point in my life, when I was a teenager, I was revolutionary. I said a lot of stuff about, you know, policies of dictatorships in my part of the world. And I visited Afghanistan in a very for a very brief period, twice precisely. And I know, I'm aware of that. But why is it forbidden for people native or Africa or the Arab world not to have opinions, even if they think those opinions are extremist, and it's only allowed for the people in the West to have opinions?
So I, in my introduction, I said you're a free man. So, but what is your situation? Because you're still not really free. Isn't that right, Mohamedou?
I am not free. Absolutely not. So I'm not in Guantanamo Bay. And believe me, I pray to Allah every day and thank Allah every day that I'm not anymore in Guantanamo Bay. But I'm denied my rights. I don't have an ID card. I cannot buy anything. I cannot sell anything. I cannot do any civil activities. I cannot even be a part of a health club. I just the other day, I went to this health club. I want to subscribe. They told me, do you have an ID? And then I was like ashamed because, you know, growing up, I would say, okay, let me just think first, and then come back to you. Because I was ashamed to say I don't have an ID because you don't have an ID only if you are running from the law. And why? I was never convicted. I was never charged with any crime, let alone convicted. Why am I being serving this sentence? For what reason?
So how are you? How are you surviving, Mohamedou?
Well, I'm trying to work, and it's very hard to work because so far my work consists of you know, writing. I'm writing. I have writing project, and people are inviting me to talk about my book and my upcoming book. By the way, I would like to share with you that is coming out in next October, the new edition without censorship, and we've been working very hard to get it restored, and so I cannot do my job because I cannot travel. And whenever I go to my government, they tell me the United States is twisting our arms and they are not allowing us to give your papers. And when I ask the United States, they will say, you are in another country. You are not our problem anymore. You see, you know, this game. And of course, I'm not blaming the United States as much as I'm blaming my own country. Because it's my own country who is the custodian of my register, civil register. I'm not an American citizen.
So let's talk about the book, your memoir, Guantanamo Diary. What prompted? Because you're really the only person in the world who has had a book published while they were incarcerated. So what made you actually put pen to paper and think I want to tell I want to document what's happened to me?
You know, as a child, I always was obsessed with writing stuff. So I would write on the margin of my copybook, and then I would make them very unorganized. And then if the teacher sees them, he had to send me back, said, no, you cannot do that. And then you have to rewrite everything. You know, everything has to be clean, and you have to leave the margin for the teacher, you know. But I kept writing stuff, and then my friends used to make fun of me because I write very intimate stuff, you know, that was supposed just to be for me, not for anyone else. And I didn't write it consciously. I wrote all this stuff subconsciously. And so when I got to Guantanamo Bay, I didn't have any pen or any paper. So I kept writing in the air and on my clothes. And then I drove the interrogators mad. They told me, what are you writing? Because they couldn't read it because I just wrote it with my fingers. And I didn't say anything. To tell you the truth, I wasn't aware of what I was writing. And then, but I just didn't want to tell them anything. So they were very angry, and then they brought special shackles to shackle me in a way that I couldn't move my hands. anymore. And so, and then later on, they gave some detainees pen and papers to write letters to their family. And I wasn't allowed to keep anything like other detainees, but I used to borrow from other detainees, then just write stuff. And then I hide it. But later on, they discovered what I was doing. They confiscated everything. They took it away. And it was mostly in Arabic. Then me writing sentences that I pick up from the guard and from our British guy who was with me. I salute him from your village. His name is Bishr Arawi. He's British. And another Australian guy by the name of David Hicks. And he's a countryman, Mamdouh, Ahmed Mamdouh. So those people, I was their neighbor. They were teaching me a little bit of English, so I was writing. At the same time, I was teaching people Arabic and the text of the Quran. And so this way, I had built a small school around myself, you know, teaching and getting taught. Years later, precisely around the end of 2005, I was allowed to see a lawyer for the first time after about 4 years. And so my lawyer asked me to write my story. And I was very happy to oblige because I really wanted to write it. And then I started writing that. And in a period of 3 months, I finished everything I sent to her.
It's incredible. So do you think your writing actually kept you going?
Yeah, I think, honestly, I think I'm talking to you because of my writing, because I chose the power of the word, you know, instead of violence, because unfortunately, this world is very filled with violence, but I'm a positive person, and it's filled with good stuff, and I think writing is a good thing, and I chose writing. And so I chose to talk to people. I chose to tell people, please give me a chance. I need you to hear me. And that's what really built momentum slowly until the U.S. government, thank God, wanted to get rid of me and leave me to the Mauritanian to deal with me.
And I have to ask you, Mohammed, because what you're doing now, since you returned to Mauritania, you are actively sharing your experience in the hope to raise awareness of this issue. The very fact that right now, you know, a lot of people have had wonderful things to say about the previous President Obama, but the fact is, you were in Guantanamo Bay when he was in the White House. So your story can actually frighten a lot of young people these days from being open and being politically active, because that in many respects that's what happened to you. You were politically active and you were outspoken. You had an opinion, and then this is what happened to you. So how can we get young people to still continue wherever they are in the world, irrespective of what kind of a country they're living in, whether it's corrupt or not corrupt, to continue speaking out?
Dil, I love this idea of global village because I feel safe, and it gives me the kind of safety and warmth that I really cannot get anywhere else. Because I, like so many young people in this corner of the world, this is personal. We want to be treated like the rest of the world. And what this global idea gives me is that I'm not different than anyone else. I could also speak. I could be vocal. I could express my grievances. I don't need violence. I don't need anything, because if there is a rule of law, there is no need of violence. If my voice is heard, I can address my grievances. So this is, I'm escaping and seeking asylum in your village in a way, even though I'm so far away. You know, this is this kind of thing that we need to band together. Let our voice be heard, because no one wants to hear our voice. You know, they made a study, a very good person that is so dear to me from the United States of America, they So they made a study about Guantanamo Bay and what makes a person be released from the camp. It's completely random and has no factor except your nationality.
It's interesting, Muhammadu, because you were saying earlier about how as an Arab, you know, you're not allowed to have an opinion, where people only in the West can have an opinion. But going back to global citizenship, you know, and here what we're all about here about global village is about us all being part of a global village and honoring the fact that we're all part of a human family. But the when it comes to globalization, you know, it only seems like the rich can move, but the poor can't. And as you just said, it's the poor guy that goes to prison, not the rich guy.
Yeah, that is correct. Unfortunately, those are mathematical statistics that and numbers never lie. You know, this is in this country where I'm speaking from, as much as it is in the United States of America, only rich people can get access to stuff, and poor people cannot get access. Mm-hmm. Even justice.
Just to remind listeners, I'm talking to Muhammadu, who, of course, was imprisoned in Guantanamo for 14 years. You know, I'm struck by this is the second time I've spoken to you, Muhammadu, and I have to say, your heart is so open. You're such a hopeful individual, and I'm heartened to I'm delighted to hear that, because normally someone who has gone through your experience would come out of that experience, you know, completely the opposite, you know, close-hearted, bitter, angry. But I don't get a sense of that from you. And unfortunately, in the last number of, last year even, last 2 years, there's been such a trend of isolationism, where, you know, Trump and Brexit, you know, it's all about, you know, protecting our borders, looking after only yourself, and closing the doors, and I suppose closing your heart. And you're actually you've gone through such a journey, and you're still a believer in doing the very opposite. How can we, I suppose, encourage people in this time where people seem to be doing closing the doors? How can we encourage them to actually do the opposite? And as we said, to embrace the reality that it is a global village.
First, that your interest in a person like me, who lives at the end of the world in a small country like Mauritania, I bet so many Irish people never heard of the name itself. It's a testament to the fact that we are connected and we are doing great effort to make our voices heard. And for instance, yes, you talk about the Brexit as those isolationist, reactionary, right extremists, whether in my country, in my part of the world, and or in your part of the world, i.e. the West, those people are only isolationists if they want to keep their money and their wealth to themselves. So don't get fooled. I don't get fooled by this rhetoric, you know, but it's too late for them. Bill and Amy, it's too late, because we are already mixed. You know, your deal, you are a testament, because you are freaking Italian, Indian, and now adding to that, you are Irish too. It's too late. And me, my brother is a German citizen, and my nephew is German, and my other nephew is studying in Malaysia. And I had, my family's members are everywhere in the world. So, and now, at this very moment, I just the other day received the invitation from the British Parliament, and I want to spread peace. I want to spread the humanity, and I want to share my story, not in bitterness, but in love. Because all I want, or all I wish for, is that human dignity is respected, because that is the most powerful weapon against extremism and things that we don't want in our world, you know, simply put.
Mohamedou Ould Slahi, thank you so much for joining us here on Global Village, author of Guantanamo Diary. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us and for continuing to share the story with the rest of the world. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you very much for having me. And I'm sending here from Mauritania so much love to my brothers and sisters in the Global Village and in the beautiful country of yours, Ireland. Thank you very much. God bless you and goodbye.